maybe what we have to do is not try and decide.
I think
maybe,
so.
Maybe we have to not think. Hi, and welcome to episode 48 of Art Juice. This is honest, generous, and hopefully humorous conversations to feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Louise Fletcher.
And me, Alice Sheridan.
And we have lots and lots to talk about this week because we haven't been together for a couple of weeks. But our main topic is going to be the topic of risk and adventure. And that's going to be just as exciting as it sounds. We also have an interesting question and we have all of our usual features. So let's just get right on with it. So Alice, tell me what you've been up to this week.
Well, I'm on flight recovery mode at the moment. I wondered this morning if actually is it possible to get seasick when you fly on an aeroplane, do you think?
Well, I don't think they'd call it seasick, would they?
It's not seasick. It's just a kind of slightly woozy sense of misbalance. And I wonder if the pressure in the ears, it's that feeling a little bit like when you've been on a boat and your feet aren't quite right.
Yes, I have had that when I've done a lot of flying, so I do know.
Okay, well, okay, maybe I'm not going crazy then. So I'm a little bit like that this morning, having flown from London to Chicago to Mexico, back to Dallas and back to London again, including a 2-hour sitting on the tarmac flight delay, which is really fun on the last really long leg of it. So yeah, it was about a 30-hour journey each way. And the reason that I was doing all of that was to join one of Nicholas Wilton's art workshops in Mexico, which they have at this fantastic place called Jaramara, which is fantastic if you like no electricity and camping in almost luxury. So you have proper beds, lovely white drapey sheet things, but open-sided cabanas, and that's absolutely, it was just the best experience. So I went last year for that. This year we were in an apartment in town, which meant that we were closer to the nightlife. So it wasn't quite such a restful experience, but it was good fun. That may be as much as you're going to get.
Okay. What happens in Mexico stays in Mexico.
Yeah, I can tell you what happens in Mexico, and it won't be a huge surprise. It's quite a lot of margarita drinking.
Yeah.
Happens in Mexico. And of course, we did do a lot of painting. There was a lot of painting. So yeah, work happened, interestingly. And it's just lovely. You know what I really like about it? Because he said, oh, that there were members of his team were there. And he said, oh, I thought you guys would just be here on holiday. And I'm like, no, I'm here to paint, because there is nothing nicer than painting alongside other people painting. I realized I just really love it. There's a kind of momentum which carries you through those patches where you feel a bit slow, and where you might, if you're on your own, take a break. And you see things in other people's work that happens, that you trigger things in yours. It's really enjoyable. I find it actually a really fab way to learn, which has probably come into what's inspired. So how's your lovely British week been? I'm back this morning. The first thing I did was look out of the window and think, oh, look at that whitey grey sky. We've had pure bleak, deep blue all week.
Well, it hasn't just been cold here. It's been... Yesterday, where I am, it snowed, but before that, it's just rained and rained and rained and windy, lashing rain. And that my studio is being built in the garden in this weather. And I've helped little bits here and there. And the little bits that I've helped have just made me so glad and grateful that I'm not the person actually out there all day doing this. You just buffeted by the weather, and it's been not as nice as yours. But
all that means is that you didn't have appropriate thermals on, you know.
I know, and I don't have thermals, so I've asked for some thermal leggings for Christmas. That's one of my but that's the kind of thing you ask for in your 50s.
It is. It's one of those things that, you know, and I'll tell you what, one of the things that I'm most excited about, one of the weird things that they have in Mexico is they have, and I totally missed this last year, pharmacies where you can basically buy almost anything you like over the counter. So I won't out anybody, but there were people buying a lot of things things over the counter. I bought at the airport a tube of retinol A skin cream.
Right. I don't know anything about that.
It's supposed to be miraculous skin cream. It's what they put in concentration in all the really expensive stuff, but this wasn't really expensive, so we'll see.
Oh, so you might be looking incredibly beautiful next week when you come. Not could that you don't always look incredibly beautiful, but even more than normal.
There could have been all sorts of really dodgy stuff that I bought. Let's just tell you that.
Oh, wow. I had no idea about that, about Mexico.
Yeah, you could get Ritalin, Viagra, OxyContin, all sorts of stuff that I've never even heard of, like Ambien. There's just a list. You basically get handed a plastic sheet, a bit like a takeaway menu.
Wow. And here, if you want to go buy some sulfadine, which is paracetamol with a tiny bit of codeine in, you have to go through like 50 questions before they'll hand it over to you.
Yeah.
Have you ever had these before? Do you know, are you taking anything else with this in it? Do you know you can only take it for 3 days and then you might become addicted? Okay, I just got a headache. Can I have some tablets? Well, yes, so I've had a cold week, you've had a warm week, and I thought this would lead us on to a topic for this week. It ties into something I was teaching on my course. So the last module of my course finishes this week, and I'm then going to have a break. Woo! But the module I called Risk and Adventure. When I started the course, the very first part of the course was about painting intuitively and with risk and letting go. And then I brought them a bit round into intention and thinking. And now I wanted to finish by sending them back to taking risks and having adventures in their work. And you just been on an adventure, which I had the opportunity to go on too, and I didn't do it. And I didn't do it because I didn't want to. And I was very, very comfortable with that decision. And every day this week, I've thought, I'm so glad I'm not doing that. I'm so glad I'm not there. But there's a little bit part of me that was questioning myself as to, are you just scared to do it? Like, why everybody thought I should go. I had won a prize to go. Everyone thought I should go. It wouldn't have cost me anything. And I didn't want to go. And I went against everyone I know in not going. And I kept doubting myself this week. Am I just a scaredy pants? Like, am I just not going because I don't particularly like flying and, you know, I don't like hot weather and I've never had any desire to go to Mexico? And is it a scaredy pants or is it a conscious choice? And am I a scaredy pants? And I went through this big questioning this week because of this module on my course and because of that. And I thought it'd be a good subject for us to talk about, because I kind of came to the conclusion that no, because there are other parts of my life where I take huge risks have big adventures, but just not this part. And is that the case for everyone? Do we take risks in different places? And I suppose mainly the question I was asking myself is, how important is it to be a person who has adventures and takes risks?
I think it is important to be somebody that takes risks. But I think, as you say, there is certainly space for that to happen on a sliding scale. I don't think that means that we all have to take everything to the extreme. I think, you know, you can start by taking risks in small ways, or it's not even about taking risk, is it? It's about leaving yourself, or leaving the question open for yourself. What would happen if I did this? And then maybe taking some time to look at both sides of the option or different outcomes that might happen. Because usually what happens when you do that is, the outcome is really not that important, actually, whichever way it goes. So, you know, you come back to your question of travel. Was it a risk to go to? It wasn't really a risk to go to Mexico for you. It was just something that you didn't want to do. If something had happened and you'd have to have gone, you would have gone, and there would have been parts about it, the long airline flight, that you wouldn't have liked, and there would have been parts about it that you did like, but it wouldn't have been the end of the world. It was just something that you chose. So I think there's definitely a difference between risk and adventure.
Yeah. I think it wasn't risky to go, well, except in my mind, because I believe every plane is going to drop from the sky like and just land on the ground. We're all going to die. So that's a bit risky. But I know that's actually not true.
Yeah.
It was an adventure that I missed out on. And I always think it's a bit like having children. I chose not to have children. And when I know there's things that I've missed out on because of that. But I know there's things that people who had children have missed out on because of their choice.
Yeah.
So it's like we make a choice, and it's what you said. There's good and bad in both choices. If I had decided to take the adventure, I would have had, I'm sure, a good and interesting time, and I would have gained things from it, which I will never know what they are because I didn't come.
I think we need to have experiences to for our life in general and within art. I think we need to always leave ourselves open to saying yes to different experiences. And during the week away, I mean, there are opportunities for doing different things. Most people don't take them because they're there to paint. And certainly last year I looked at the list and it was zip wiring and all this kind of stuff. And I thought, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm here to paint. This year I was very tempted. A group went off and did surfing. And partly because when I was there last time, I said to myself, if I ever come again, I'd like to do surfing. I'd like to have a go and try and, you know, stand up. And I didn't go, but it wasn't because I was scared of it. It was just not the space that I was in at that time to give it a chance. And I felt like I was having a different enough experience of the place anyway. I think if I had been bored, if it had felt like a repeat of last time, then I would have done it. But it felt sufficiently different enough anyway. And I think it's helpful for us just to be conscious about what experiences we're having and what we can do to encourage more of those. And that can be even on a small scale. I mean, I don't know if you have it, but I have weeks where I feel it, you know, when everything becomes a little bit routine, sometimes it's, you know, on the one side, it can be peaceful and reassuring. And then if it goes on too long, it gets a bit dull and repetitive and boring. And even though I love where I live, I'm like, I've got to get out. I've got to go and see something different and just, you know, just have different things around me. And when I say that, all I mean is actually get on the train and go into the centre of London and see what's going around rather than get up and walk the dog and go to the shop and come home and paint. So I think having experiences is really important.
One of the things I was just thinking then about when we moved back here from America, which was a huge risk because we had a settled life. We'd been there 20 odd years, we had a business. It was like, I just really felt like I wanted to be here. So we came back and took the risk that everything would work out, which it has.
And that's a financial risk too. That's a very different thing. It was quite a big financial risk.
Yeah, it was. It was a financial risk and I suppose a happiness risk. Like, what if we get back here and particularly Phil, my husband, really hates it. And then what, you know? But one thing about it was, it did all work out perfectly well, but it was an adventure. Everyday life was an adventure when we got back. Going to Sainsbury's was like exciting and different because we didn't have a Sainsbury's or whatever supermarket. And every single thing we did was an adventure and experience because we'd been away so long and Britain had changed so much in the time we were gone. And I always think, I wish I could have kept life feeling like that because it just, I tell you what, time goes so much more slowly when everything's new. And it made me realize that's why time seems to go slower for kids because everything's new to them.
Yeah.
My days seem to stretch forever. That first year went on for about 10 years. But now everything's a routine and it all goes by and you don't even notice it.
And I think I was talking about this with somebody away. It's a really strange thing, isn't it? We were talking about how you go on holiday to go. I mean, I know some people go back to the same place every year, but we always try to go on holiday somewhere different. But it's also strange how quickly, even on holiday, even in a totally different country, a totally different climate, people like to have routine and rhythm. And you see it with like, people sitting in the same place in a restaurant every night, or they meet at the same time to go to dinner, or they find, you know, one place that they like and they'll go there every night for dinner rather than trying somewhere new, which is a risk thing, or sitting by the swimming pool in the same place, or even... I don't even just like little small things, like, you know, when you go into a room and it's an empty room and it has, I don't know if you have this, it has nothing in it. And the first time you go in and you have this, there's this 5 minutes of literally you go around doing stupid things like opening drawers and going, oh, look, there's a drawer that opens. You know, of course there's a drawer that opens. What do you expect it to do? But you do that kind of 5 minutes of, oh, here's a new place, explore. And, you know, then you unpack your stuff from a suitcase and you get everything arranged just how you like it. And it's all about just making things feel a little bit comfortable for yourself.
When we first moved to Canada, we got married on a Saturday, and on the Sunday we went to Canada. That was it. And we arrived with just a few suitcases. All our stuff was being shipped, and they put us in a motel in on the outskirts of Toronto. Anyone in from Canada, it was in Brampton. It was awful. It was snowy and cold. We got there in winter. It was in a car park, this motel. The motel was fine, but the setting was awful. Anyway, we were so adrift. I just remember on the way from the plane, we were on a motorway. I've forgotten what it's called, but it's 4 or 5 lanes on each side. And I was just overwhelmed. And then we got to this motel in the middle of nowhere, and I remember Phil asking if the room had a shower, because we were from England in the 80s. Not everyone had a shower, and they just looked at us like, yeah, of course it has a shower. We were so out of water. Anyway, that night we walked across the car park looking for something to eat, and we found this place called Boston Pizza, and we both remember it to this day. It was just a bar that sold pizza and beer in jugs. But the barman was really friendly to us. He gave us food and drink. And I remember thinking, like, okay,
I love you.
We can eat. Like, we're safe, we're warm, we can eat food, we're going to survive. And we went there. It reminded me of that, because we went there every night for ages until we got our own place, because it was safety and security. And we knew the barman with the limp, and he would always bring us a pitcher of beer.
Okay, then. So then the question is, so how do you do the opposite? So the first thing is, probably it's fair enough that we all do that. Otherwise, we would all be out on a limb all the time, wouldn't we? And it would be a little bit exhausting. So knowing that we do that, and that's fine to have our routines, what do we do that is definitely different and that shakes it up a bit? I mean, do you have? So are we talking about then in your work? I'm not sure I ever have adventure in my work. Do I have adventure? I have risk. I take risk, and I think risk is trying something new, but I'm not sure adventure. Adventure to me is like a clearer, determined project, perhaps, whereas risk is more an attitude that you carry with you and remind yourself is valuable from time to time.
I think I go on an adventure sometimes with in my painting, so we might just be defining it differently, and I want to talk about that when we get to the question, the adventure that I had with the painting this week. But it felt like going out on an adventure, and it did start with risk. Total risk, but it felt like an adventure because it felt like a journey to another place, and it took me somewhere different, and I had fun, I had stimulation, I had excitement, I had challenge, and so to me that feels like adventure. So that just might be a different definition.
I think it's almost like a series of things. It's like I was reading I think it's 1960s, might even be 1950s book, Hans Hoffmann book, when I was away. And he talks about the difference between an idea and a thought. And I thought that was quite an interesting difference. It was almost like an idea is a, I'm going to get it the wrong way around now, aren't I? A thought is the thing that, you know, when something is a little bit fleeting, it comes across and it just lands, that's a thought. And then when you have enough thoughts, it kind of coagulates into an idea. that's a bit more specific. And I think maybe that's the thing with risk and adventure. Risk is something that kind of happens. It's a moment thing. It's something that maybe you create the conditions for, or you encourage yourself into an adventure is something that's a little bit more conscious.
Yeah. And I think, but I was thinking, so how do I don't do anything in my daily life to bring that risk in. It feels like my painting is where the risk part of my life is now. Except the only thing I do these days that feels risky is when I go out, as I did the other day for a walk, and I thought literally on the way back, I could die at the side of this road, which was an exaggeration because I wouldn't have died at the side of the road. But it was so cold and the wind was blowing so hard, the snow in my face. And I was wading through the snow, which was maybe only 4 inches deep, but it feels heavy when you're going uphill, like uphill in snow that deep. And I thought,
we've had such opposite weeks.
No, and I thought, if I fell down in this field now, like if I, because it's all reeds and it's covered in snow, so you can't see where the dips are. And if I fall down here and sprain my ankle and my phone had gone dead. So I thought, this is a bit of an adventure. This is a risk. But that is truly at the moment as risky as my own life gets.
Yeah.
And I wonder, I don't feel that my paintings lack any risk. But
is this not all relative?
I wonder if I should have more risk and adventure, I suppose. That.
But I think all of this is relative, isn't it? If relative to what's happening in your life, your paintings, that if you did something in your life that was truly risky and adventurous now, do you not think that it would have, that you would as a result end up making different kind of paintings? It's yeah, almost possibly, inevitable.
Possibly, yeah, definitely, because your life would, what your experiences of everything would change.
Yeah.
But I think
Maybe it's something you don't even want that much at the moment.
And yet in other aspects of my life, so really the last year and a half have been a huge risk, a risk yes. that most people wouldn't take. Like
yes.
to take all your savings and to spend it all based on an idea that something, i.e. my courses, might work yeah. and might not. And at the end of, and then there's a 1 week period where you find out if everything you've been doing for the last year is worthwhile or not. That was a big risk. And maybe it's the fact that we can only take so much risk in our lives. And maybe if my work life settled down, maybe I would start feeling the need to go out on adventures. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe there's just too much uncertainty and risk in this one area and everything else needs to stay settled.
Well, it's certainly not good for you, is it, when you have kind of stress and adrenaline and raised cortisol and all of that kind of stuff, when your body really reacts to risk to that degree, that's not a situation that you can actually function in terribly well. So yeah. there has to be something in taking risks in some areas and keeping it balanced with areas that where you don't take it. And I think if you're in a situation where you were genuinely at risk or in difficult relationships, I think that takes all your functioning energy to cope with that element, and then you don't have it spare.
Yeah, and we're talking about risk, you just reminded me, from a place of real privilege.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like we don't have
yeah.
actual risks.
Yeah.
And I've been reading a series in the paper the last few weeks about homeless people dying on the streets in Britain. And that's a risk of being outside in the weather. When I'm saying I'm walking uphill in the cold with the snow,
yeah.
I'm coming back to a warm house with a fire and enough electric to pay the bills and enough money to feed myself. And that's a very different type of risk than some people have to live with. So obviously, I just want to say that because there might be people listening who are living in real risky situations and think this sounds very pampered.
But well, I think it's like anything, isn't it? It is all on a sliding scale. But and I think understanding how it fits in. I mean, making art in general is owning art is in general a luxury. You're only gonna. Well, I am you know, I'd only spend money on paints once I knew I had food to feed myself. I love doing it, but given the choice, I'd rather eat.
Yeah.
So, you know, all of it is within an understanding that this is a choice we have. So I guess then it comes back to whether making that choice of having an element of risk is something you even want in your art. And I think for lots of artists, it isn't. They don't want to explore that. They're perhaps making art, or they simply just enjoy the kind of art that is calm, and that's the process that they want for it, both from themselves and in the final piece. Although I had a very interesting conversation with one lady on this group, and she was a critical care nurse, and she said, you know, she makes art in the time that she has, and she wants it to have this sense of calm, but she said it wasn't quite feeling enough. And that we had a conversation about how you can kind of let all the chaotic element out first and then edit and redefine it into something that's calm. And she was like, that makes so much sense, you know, and both as a, you know, as a process for her and as a more interesting painting. Yeah. And they were very calm paintings, you know, simple colored, blended colors. You know, horizon line is always a very kind of calming thing, isn't it? But very simple in terms of construction, but the sense of the process. And she was finding it difficult to understand, if she wanted the end result of something calm, how there was any part of the process that could be a bit haphazard. It was almost like anything haphazard took her off course from what she wanted as an end result. And yeah. I think in the conversation helped her see that you can deviate into other areas, and that will actually come back and contribute to the whole painting.
And then you're expressing, in that instance, she's getting to express all that stuff that she's having to deal yeah. with, and yeah. then bringing what she wants over top of it, which is much more profound, isn't it, than just trying to have it right from the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. I took some, it's funny, I went this week thinking I want to take some risks. You haven't seen yet what I've done. I was exhausted last night, but I did, before I went to bed, I did have to go and unpack the things that I'd done just to have a look at them. You know, again, you know, when something is out of context and people said to me, oh, they're finished. And I said, I can't, until I get home and unpack them and have a look at them at home, I can't yeah. tell you. Firstly, the lights are weird here. You know, I've got to see how they are at home. But I went with intention of taking risks and doing something that was very different. I wanted to play more in light, neutral spaces, and more with, I've been doing kind of color mixing and dragging a bit on the bigger paintings. And I haven't worked on anything this small for quite a long time. So I was interested to see how it related back down to something that was small scale. But at the end of the week, I still feel like I've done paintings that are me. I don't know if they're risky enough, even though I was trying to.
Yeah. I don't know. However many risks we take, though, we can't get away from being ourselves, can we?
No. Are we done with this? Are we on to the question then?
I think we should, yes, I think we should wrap this up, and I think we should go on to the question, which is, you put this question in the notes, so you tell me about the question. And then
okay. So the question really, it's my question. It came about from discussions over this week, which was, you know, there were a whole group of people, and, you know, not everybody was there as professional artists or even serious artists. Some people was there simply for holiday and having something to do. But this was the question that came up, was how do we create new things in our work? And if we spend a lot of time finding our voice, finding our style, following what we like, using our intuition, going with what feels good to us, you know, all of those things, intuitively following what is you. What happens when something different occurs in your work? And should that be something that you follow because it feels risky and new and pushing the boundaries? or is it just a kind of aberration and a side shoot and a one-off thing? So it's this pull and push between when our work is ourself and when something different comes along. And I think that's what I've had a little bit this week. And I do recognize it in the past, every so often, a painting that will come along and something very different happens in it. And I can tell that. Like there was one piece that I did, I think, on the second day, and it hasn't changed all week, because every time I went back to it, I thought, no, that's good as it is. No, that's good as it is. Whereas the others I was kind of coming back to and I was making changes. And there was something in that one. There was a simplicity to it. But is that the kind of work that I want to be making going forward? I don't know. So how do we tell when something is ourself in a good way, maybe, or when we're even ready for something new?
Which is a really good timing for me, because this is what happened to me this week. So I set an exercise for the last week of my course. And the exercise was to make a painting purely for yourself. Like, nobody's going to see it. Nobody's not going to show it. You're going to do it whatever size you want, whatever colors you like. You're just going to make it for yourself with no other end result in mind. And I did the same assignment and filmed myself doing it for the course. And so I've been working with intention for quite a while now on these paintings inspired by Ted Hughes. And so this was not about that, because it was just for me, and I was just going to move paint around in a way that felt good and see what happened. And then what happened was, about halfway through the painting, I started to write words into it. Because I like writing words. It was a big, big canvas, and I started to write these words. And one of the words I wrote was unspoken. And it came, and then I thought, oh, that's what this is called. It's unspoken. And it's about all the things that I don't say, and all the ways I act like what your business coach Judith calls a good girl, all the ways in which I just put on a nice face to everybody and don't say what I really want to say. And then all these thoughts were flooding in. I was like, oh my God, that's like all the time when I was little. And my mum was like, you're too loud. Stop being so bossy. Stop telling everyone what to do. And all the ways when I moved abroad that I shaped myself into a different person in order to fit into a different culture. And all of a sudden, I was like, oh my God, I have to make like a whole series of paintings about this, and I have to write things into them and then obliterate what I've written and then write more things and then cover them up. And it has to be a whole series about the way in which I, but also many women, don't say all of the things we want to say. And it just felt really profound. But then I was like, but then the next day I was like, oh, but I'm working on this other idea. And so should I drop that idea and do this? This feels really exciting, but it might just be a temporary aberration, or it might just be a one-off painting that just stays as it is. And there doesn't have to be, maybe there doesn't have to be a whole
series. Yeah.
Maybe what we have to do is not try and decide.
I think
Maybe we have to not think. Because the way that came about was because I wasn't thinking. When I wasn't thinking, something happened that tied in with everything else I'm interested in. Because if I think about it, my courses, they're all about helping people find a way to express who they really are. So it must be something I'm deeply interested in. But if I start thinking, right, let me do a series and let me organize it this way, and then it's
controlled all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely something in thinking. We did an exercise which I've not done before, which is where we paired up and you had to paint with somebody talking to you and asking you questions. And to be honest, I think I do this anyway in my studio practice to a degree, by making sure that I have radio on that isn't music. I think some people do it with music and they get their head into the music. I prefer to do it with Radio 4 talk radio usually, because they have fascinating programs on sometimes. And I realize then that I've painted for half an hour without thinking about it because I'm thinking about what's in the program. But this was a similar thing, to have somebody ask you questions. And I had Susan, who's the other coach, and I thought, I'm going to have to wind her up more than this. So I started asking her maths problems. Verbally out loud, and it was really interesting. You could actually see physically how she moved differently, because she was almost like having to stop and the energy was going into the math problems. And other people in the group, they said that depending on what subject they were talking about, their movements changed.
Right.
It was only a short period of time, but there is something about not thinking. But I also really strongly believe that you do need an element of thought and direction in it, even if that is only somehow the point of recognition of when to stop, what colors you want to add, because otherwise if it becomes too unthinking, then there's no evidence of skill. And that's important for me.
So I totally agree with that. But I think the thinking part can come after the initial
thing.
So in my case, it was totally unthinking. And then I realized it was about something, which made sense to me. Then I started to think during the painting, okay, what would be some of the ways I could convey that idea in different ways? Writing things in and veiling it over with paint, but what other ways could I convey that same idea? And also, is this a good design? And are the colours working? And all of that still has to come in, I think. But there was something for me about taking the idea of anyone else seeing it out of the equation altogether, that brought something new up.
And okay.
I wouldn't have got to by thinking. So I wouldn't have had that idea if I sat with a notepad trying to come up with a meaning.
Oh, no, you can't do that. No, you can't sit in it. It's got to come out of the painting initially. But now you've got that, though. Can you see that that could develop along a separate track simultaneously for you developing the Ted Hughes work? Or do you think one has to be finished? Or do you think you can have two kind of tracks of inquiry going at the same time?
I've got a feeling that they're related, and I'm trying to piece it together in my mind. But the Ted Hughes fascination that I had with his poetry from being 15 came from, I think, this sense of reading something that felt like what was swirling inside me as a teenage girl, because there was a lot swirling inside me then.
Okay, so there's a link anyway.
But I think there's a link. I think it's like I recognized something about the way I felt about things, which was not allowed in my sphere of existence.
Yeah.
Or wasn't, you know, the way anybody else was. I was like, I now realize a natural artistic person born into the least artistic family you could ever hope to meet, and with no interest in anything creative. And so it was almost like a moment of recognition in poetry so I think somehow they're linked, but I haven't quite pieced it together in my own mind.
And I think that's where the part of just allowing time comes into it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
not being in a rush to get to a solution with it, and so trying more, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. What did you think of your one that's so different when you looked at it then in out of, you know, at home? Did it feel like you?
I have. What I did was I took them upstairs last night and I dropped them into blank frames that I've got. And I think I was pretty on point in the ones that I thought were fit. There was one that I thought, yeah, I think that's probably finished. It's so finished. It's done. The ones that I weren't sure about aren't finished. But this one, I'm not sure. And maybe it is just one for me. And for anybody who was there, it's the kind of grey and yellow one with just the swoosh and the single cutting edge. Maybe it's just one that I just keep for me, and nothing else will be ever to that extreme. Because I think if I ended up doing, say I ended up taking that idea and doing 10 along similar lines, then it would become a little bit formulaic because it's so simple in execution. So it would become a bit of a system. And then I don't think I'd be interested. I think maybe that's the thing. Then I don't think I'd be interested in it anymore. Whereas the way that it came just by chance, I'll take a photograph of it and I'll put it in the show notes.
Oh, good.
You can all have a look.
Because I think that's the point. I think we can't say, okay, I'm going to replicate that again.
No.
We can never do that. But perhaps we can approach the next things we do in whatever spirit or attitude or mindset created that, so that instead of creating replicas for me of this painting, instead of creating unspoken 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, maybe I just approach another series of canvases or boards in the same mindset of, this is just for me and it's not for anybody else, it's just mine. And then I see what happens.
If you can do it. I mean, I think the thing with this one is, it was, like I say, it was really early on, and it was supposed to be, it was at that point where it was pure, like you say, play with colour, play with the paint, let something happen by chance, and something happened by chance and it was good. And then there was something that I made that was a more decisive mark, and it brought a degree of clarity to it. And it was just that everything fell at the right, in the right place. But if I was going to take that in onwards into working practice, it would either feel a little bit hit and miss. And I'm not sure that as a process and a practice, that's something that actually suits me. I like going through a process and then having to resolve things. And I think because this was so simple, I think you would inevitably have to accept that you would end up with 7 out of 10 paintings that you would have to throw away.
Right.
And maybe that's where it comes in. I don't think I'm prepared to do that, actually. I'm not prepared to have a process that relies that much on an element of things not working in a way that I can never get to a point of resolution with them. I think for me, I enjoy the process of bringing in things that are unexpected, but then I like the sense of resolving it.
Right.
So this is where it comes right back to what we were talking about at the beginning, about choosing different degrees and knowing where you're comfortable and knowing where you aren't. And maybe I just say, I'm happy with this amount of risk, but a risk that ends up with a lot of work inevitably being trashed because it's about something so spontaneous, which inevitably is not going to be good every time. Mm-hmm. That a lot just gets thrown away. I'm not a goer for that. Does that make me non-risky? I don't know. Maybe it does. Well,
in this area, maybe. But then that's just, we all decide what we want, don't we? I think for me, I'm definitely going to let my intuition lead on some more and try to keep out of my head the idea. Try to stop thinking about the idea, because that just might be an idea for one painting. It doesn't have to be my life's work, which is what my tendency is, to start putting it into place, making a plan. Oh, I know how I could do this on Instagram, and I could, you know, there'd be all these things I could do with it.
Yeah,
that's not going to work for me. I just have to, that was really quite powerful what happened just by working intuitively. So I just need to do that again and let whatever it is be whatever it is.
I think it's a great question. You know, are you painting like this doesn't matter? Are you painting like this is just for you? You know, and I think perhaps that if you feel that you're in a situation where you have got too controlled, just to remind yourself of that. When was the last time that you did something that you haven't tried before within painting? That's always a good thing to use to kind of pull yourself back. So
when was the last time you did something just for yourself? When was the last time you just enjoyed yourself?
Yeah, quite often.
Well, it might be, for some people it might be all the time, but for a lot of people, I guarantee it's not.
And I think that that is something that has changed for me over the last 5 years, for definite.
Right. Yes, me too.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think we've answered that. Has that sorted you out now, Alice? Are you all set to go, since it was your question?
All set to go, yeah, all set.
Okay, good. Okay, so inside, outside, what's inspired this week? So you've had a much more inspirational week than me, so you go first.
I knew it was going to be an inspirational week. But because I've been before, I also knew a little bit of what was to come. And I think, therefore, what surprised me was, and it was a big group. There were, I think, I didn't count, but I think 20, 22 people plus team members. And it was how, within a group of people, how much I love when those connections form. And at the beginning we spoke a bit, like you do in any of these situations, a little bit of an introduction, but at that point you don't know everybody, so you have everybody's stories and then you kind of forget about them, or you forget which story goes with which person, or and then by the end you've got to know everybody a little bit better. I just loved how the group vibe was a little bit different this year. Wasn't better, it wasn't worse, it was just different because there were different people there. And it's really made me think I've got to get my acting gear and do some more in-person events, because I love that. And I had a few people kicking my butt into doing that as well, saying, just get on with it, we'll come.
Well, you've got your own space now to do it in, so you've got no excuse.
There's the own space, and there's also creating something similar, which is a week away, you know, a retreat away with everybody staying together, which is going to take a lot more organizing and finding, I think. But you know, it was lovely to have people introduce themselves. People came up and it was like, we know you because we listen to the podcast. And I must do a special mention for Laurie Kuo, who's she's in my Connected Artist Club, and she listens to the podcast. And on the last evening, she came up with a card. And we have a gift, Louise. We have a painting apron.
I know, you said on Facebook.
It's hand-painted. She hand-painted the Art Juice logo onto the pocket for us each.
Oh, Laurie, thank you so much.
And they are going to be the best aprons for in the summer, because they don't tie. They just slip over your shoulders and they have a crossover back. So, and they're lovely and kind of lightweight, whereas the one that I use is really heavyweight canvas. So that was, you know, a really nice little treat.
Oh, amazing. Thank you, Laurie.
And it was so good as well, because I knew a bit of her work beforehand, to see her work change over the course of the week and know what a difference it's going to make when she goes back to her bigger pieces. Yeah. So it just meeting it, I just don't think you can beat it, meeting in person. Totally inspirational. Loved it.
Well, mine's a bit different. My inspiration this week is about other kinds of art. So much of the time, when I don't watch very much TV, but if I do, it's usually Netflix or iPlayer, something on my laptop, and I watch whatever is there, and I watch some real rubbish, to be honest, sometimes, and think, why am I even watching this? Most of the things I think that are created for us are not that great. And I listen to Radio 2 all day, and I listen to music that's okay, not that great. Things like Ed Sheeran, they're poppy and catchy, but they don't. And this week I discovered two things. One, they're both not new. One is a TV series on, I think it was on BBC, called Guilt. It was a Scottish four-part TV series. And I really apologise for everybody who's not in Britain, who can't watch this. But it was four parts. It was truly brilliant. It was a mystery. It was a black comedy. It was unique to anything I've ever seen on TV before. Every moment of it, do you ever have that sense that you're just thinking, this is really good fun? Like, every moment of this show is good fun. I am really loving every second.
Is that the one where they start having a hit and run accident?
Yes. Yes.
I've heard so many people talk about this, and I watched the first episode and I was a bit meh about it.
Oh, you've got to keep going. It was really so good. Twists and turns and humor and just so profoundly good. And I thought, you know, there's real talent involved in this, the writer, the director, the actors. And then we watched something that was the absolute opposite of that called Safe on Netflix. And if anybody's about to think about watching it, it's okay. But the ending's really, really disappointing and pathetic. But the music for it is by a guy called Barnes Courtney. And by his name, I assumed he was some country American guy, but he's not. He's from Britain. And it is such good music and so different from anything that I've heard before. So I downloaded his album and I've been listening and learning more about him. He's quite a young guy. But it's just a reminder, I suppose also about stepping up my game, but a reminder of how much of kind of average stuff we're presented and we settle for, and what really good art looks like when it's, you know, when someone's put all their heart and soul into their work and created something unique rather than Safe was. It was almost like a team of writers had said, we need a mystery, let's come up with a good way of have a mystery, someone's gonna have to find out the answer, as opposed to having a unique individual personal idea and bringing it to life.
But I think this is a problem that that we have, because we're exposed to so many things. We see so much, and so much has been done before. And actually, it's very difficult to come up with anything new. And I think the areas these days that are genuinely full of innovation are the technology type areas. And it's hard, you know, if you're working with paint's an old medium. So unless you want to start doing like computer-based installations, like this book, this Hans Hofmann book I'm reading, because it's old and all the illustrations are all the paintings are reproduced in black and white. I mean, talk about dog's dinners, half of them. Honestly, they're a complete mess. And I think quite a lot of some of the 50s abstracts, I look at them and I think, whoa.
Yeah. You know,
there's a lot, and I think we've just become so fine-tuned to things that it's very difficult to do anything that breaks out of that and feels I want to say complete and polished, but I know that's not what everybody's working towards. It's not even what I'm working towards, but like everything is finished and finessed often so well these days, isn't it?
But
it's difficult to push it.
A couple of other TV examples that really occurred to me while you were talking. Fleabag,
yeah, who
actually is your likeness. Like you look exactly like Fleabag. By the
and
way,
I watched the whole first series on the plane on the way over again. It's really funny.
Oh, so good, so unique, because somebody wrote. And there's a show, and I think it's on Netflix, called Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. And this woman fascinates me. She's a comedian. She, as a kid, she always wanted to be in musicals, and she used to sing and imagine her life as a musical. She always, every time something happened to her, she imagined people bursting into song. So she wrote this drama where that's exactly what happens. It's a TV comedy musical. But the songs are hilarious, and it's a bit Fleabag-y in the way it's about a young woman.
Yeah.
But so unique. And I read a piece with her, and she just said, I was told over and over and over again, nobody wants a musical TV show, especially one that's so unrealistic. But I just did it anyway, because that's what I loved personally, because I loved it so much, I thought someone else must want this. And isn't that the same with what we do? We can tell ourselves it's not possible to be unique, but if it's possible for them to come up with something on television, which has been, you know, surely everything's been done on television before, can't we do it?
Yeah, I'm sure we can. I'm sure we can. And I think, you know, it does come from those glimmers where you do something. I think when you do something that surprises yourself is a good thing. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's that we can't, you know, to create risk or to create adventure is a little bit self-conscious right from the beginning. It's a bit like, and I, we can do it. You can set situations up for it to happen in, but it's still a bit forced. Whereas actually what we're talking about, the magic moments are, is when you do something or when something happens and it surprises even ourselves.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Those are the bits that are really exciting, aren't they?
And there's a quote I remember you putting somewhere recently, and it was from Andy J. Pizza, who has the Creative Pep Talk podcast.
Yeah.
And he had a quote, and I'll get it all muffled up, but his thing was basically, think about the thing that everyone says is weird about you.
Yeah.
The thing that this, and this is like the woman with the crazy ex-girlfriend.
Yeah.
The thing that everyone says, you can't do that, that's stupid, or that you get told off for as a kid, or that everyone just, and that's the thing you should pursue with your art, whatever kind of art you make.
I don't know what that is in my art, though. That's too hard. I get that in terms of personality and about how that's what that makes unique. But I think when we're looking at our own work, it's really, it's difficult to be objective to that point.
I suppose this, I was about to ask you loads of questions about this, and then that's a whole other episode where we
have to. I'm looking at the clock and I'm thinking we should be finishing and we're just getting started.
I'm not going to ask you any more questions about that. We'll have that as another topic.
Is this the last one of the year?
It is.
Happy Christmas, everybody, then.
And Happy New Year, because we won't be back until after the New Year. So yep. We're having 2 weeks off. So when are we back? Tuesday, the 7th of January.
So what you can do in that time, if you're new, you can go back through all the back catalogue if you want.
And you can go make something that's just for you.
Actually, on that note, I'll give you a little Christmas ideas tip before we go, is that we've done all sorts of things for Christmas in the past. We've done find something for people for under £20, buy a present for one person, buy a present from a charity shop, make something that's edible, all the things. One year, everybody came to us for Christmas and I said, no, we're not going to do this. So I sent out instructions to everybody that they were to buy themselves one gift, one thing that they wouldn't normally treat themselves to or choose or spend time selecting, whatever it was. And then to make it fun, they were going to wrap it up, bring it over to us where we were spending the day without a label and put it under the tree. And then after lunch, we distribute the presents randomly. And when I told this away, everyone went, what, you mean so all your lovely present went to someone else? I said, no. So they got opened randomly and then we had to match the presents back with their correct owner.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And it was really good fun. And it was just actually, because you know when you're buying presents for people and you buy what you think they'd like. And it was really interesting to see what people really chose when they were choosing for themselves. And it wasn't always the most over the top or the most, kind of luxurious gift or anything. Like my uncle bought himself a new carving knife set. You know, so sometimes it was really practical and sometimes it was things where people said, you know, I'd never have gone and just given myself the chance to go and choose this. So it's probably a little bit late for Christmas ideas. The idea of it, of taking time to kind of treat yourself in amongst all of this busyness that we've got coming up, is probably a good one.
I have a funny Christmas present story to end on. I asked our neighbour, the little boy who spends all his time here, what do you want for me for Christmas? And it has to be, he said, oh, an Xbox. And I said, no, that's the kind of thing you ask your parents for. What do you want? It has to be something small. So he thought for a minute and he said, an iPhone. I said, well, that's expensive. He said, it's small though. Yes, it is.
It is. Be precise.
That's it. From us for this year, everybody, thank you for a brilliant year and we will see you in 2020.
We will. Thank you so much. We'll see you again soon. Bye.
Bye.
This is like my worst nightmare of Christmas crackers, but only it's coming early.
Hello.
I have a sherry. Will that help? Hang on.
Well, if you've got a sherry, then I need a ginger wine.
What's a ginger wine?
Ginger, well, it's a little
bit... Oh, I can't hear you anymore. Where have you gone?
Oh.
You know, something really exciting that's just happened.
Go on.
The final roof plank went onto my studio building.
Ooh.
So it is now sealed. We should have had a... I think they do call it a topping out ceremony when I watch Grand Designs, but we didn't have one.
I was thinking we need a special section of the podcast that is just called Louise's Studio Updates.
And we can have Andy come in and say, oh, it's going rubbish.
And that was the other thing. Somebody said, can we not have him come in with his cup of tea and his biscuit, please? Yeah. Yes. Anyway, I've got a joke for you.
Go on.
It's really bad. Do you want the really bad one or the bad, bad one?
Whatever's okay. The worst joke you've got.
Okay. What do snowmen wear on their heads?
Well, I don't know. What do snowmen wear on their heads, Alice?
Ice caps.
Okay, that's really, really bad. Have you got one that's better than that?
I think better is a relative term. I've got, what does Santa do with unfit elves? Sends them to an elf farm. Why did Santa's helper see the doctor? Because he had low elf esteem. Oh, there's more, there's 101. Do you want all of them?
No, I don't want 101. Maybe just one more.
Okay, let me find one more.
The very best one you can find, the very funniest.
Okay, here's one. How does Christmas Day end?
Well, usually in tears and recriminations at my house, but go on.
With the letter Y.